As part of the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, U.S. federal loan limits for graduate and professional students are being restructured to establish specific annual and aggregate caps. But graduate nursing students have been included in a different category from medical, pharmacy, and dental students. I'm Stephen Morrissey, managing editor of the New England Journal of Medicine, and I'm talking with Amy Stimpfel, an assistant professor at the New York University Rory Myers College of Nursing. Dr. Stimpfel has co-authored a prospective article about borrowing limits for graduate nursing education and the importance of evidence-based policymaking. Dr. Stimpfel, currently, how much of their tuition and other expenses can graduate students, including nursing and other students, cover using loans? And what are the typical sources of those loans?
So currently, graduate students who are borrowing under the Grad Plus loans, which are one of the main loans being restructured under the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, students are able to borrow up to the full cost of attendance of their program. And so that is determined by each program, each college or university. And it can include things beyond tuition.
And then what limits on borrowing is the federal government now proposing for these students?
They've proposed that effective of July 1st, 2026 this year, that the Grad Plus loans will be eliminated. And the Department of Education's RISE Committee, the Reimagining and Improving Student Education Committee, has essentially created two tiers of students, professional students, those in medicine, dentistry, or law, who can borrow up to $50,000 a year or an aggregate of $200,000, while the second group, graduate students, including nurses, social workers, and other students, are capped at just $20,500 a year or an aggregate of $100,000.
And what reasons have policymakers given for implementing these caps?
So the Education Department for these loan restructuring has used a 1965 definition, the Higher Education Act of 1965, and this doesn't reflect the modern reality of graduate nursing education today. For context, the very first nurse practitioner program was established in 1965 at the University of Colorado, and then the profession underwent a massive scaling up in the 1970s as there was federal funding and professional recognition grew, and this was largely driven by the Nurse Training Act of 1971.
And then specifically, why were graduate nursing students classified as graduate students instead of professional students with medical and dental, for example?
The basis that we could find from the Education Department was using this outdated, over a half a century old definition using the Higher Education Act.
In your perspective article, you described the response to this framework by nurses and other stakeholders. What possible implications of the new borrowing limits for nursing students have been cited?
I've been following the public comment period that opened in January and has since closed, and there has really been a massive response. The initial estimates show over 50,000 public comments, and a significant majority of these comments are focused on the exclusion of graduate nurses from the professional degree category. And when we think about the potential downstream effects of this policy, I sort of think in two streams. One is a pipeline stream of advanced practice providers, and one is the pipeline of nurse faculty. So if they're high potential students that are being deterred from graduate programs to become advanced practice registered nurses, including nurse practitioners, nurse midwives, nurse anesthetists, if they're not able to bridge the gap between the new lower loan amount of $20,500 per year and the actual cost of attendance, we risk losing out on this important group of healthcare workers who often serve vulnerable and rural populations. And then the second potential pipeline disruption can be in nurse faculty. So in order to train new registered nurses, we need faculty prepared with at least a master's degree. Most programs prefer a PhD or a DNP, so doctoral level training. So if these educators can't afford their own degrees, then the nursing pipeline is threatened, and that really undermines our entire healthcare infrastructure.
You write, however, that the lack of data to support this decision has received too little attention. In fact, what do available data suggest about borrowing risk among graduate nursing students as compared with these other students?
My co-author and I were really curious around what data was available that might have supported this policy. And when we looked at what is available, for example, the three-year cohort default rates that are available, they're only available by institution. They're not disaggregated by profession. And so we thought, what data are available and how might we use those to think about borrowing risk? So we used Bureau of Labor Statistics, ONET data, and aggregated program cost to create a very simple debt to earnings ratio to illustrate the risk of borrowing. And what we found were that advanced practice registered nurses, so graduate prepared nurses, were actually the lowest of all professions that we did this analysis on. And so it really supports the return on investment of graduate nursing as being a positive one, and that there's been other evidence in more formal analyses that have shown generally that graduate nursing programs have an excellent return on investment.
Finally, in another New Perspective article, Joseph and colleagues describe nursing as a profession that continues to rank very high on measures of trust in the United States. What steps can graduate nursing programs take to help advance the role of nurses in these national health discussions, including discussions about the policies we're talking about now?
I think one of the strengths of the nursing profession is our ubiquity. We are the largest and most accessible and diverse segment of the healthcare workforce with roughly about 5 million nurses. And because we function across care delivery settings, not just in traditional senses of hospitals and outpatient settings, but in community clinics, schools, homes, houses of worship, and businesses, we have the opportunity in all of those different care settings to use our voice to promote these issues, to create public awareness so that the voices of nurses can be amplified. And I think in seeing some of the public comments in the open comment period for this proposal, it shows how strong that voice can be when it's amplified by others.
Thank you, Dr. Stimpfel.